It is my privilege to welcome up our guest preacher today. This summer, we're having a series of guest preachers come in while Brent is on renewal leave. And so I get to welcome Reverend Dr. Montague Williams, who is a professor at Point Loma Nazarene University. He teaches theology. And would you give him a welcome as he comes up? Sure.
I think this mic is on. Awesome. Well, good morning. It's an honor to be here with all of you. I'm going to say some things that you're going to hear a lot, I guess, since your pastor is going on sabbatical. This is a cool place. This is awesome. It's cool. You're in a big circle. All of those things. You're going to hear it a lot, I assume. And I feel it all as well. And, you know, I'm going to do this a lot awkwardly because I don't do that all the time, but it really is good to be here. And I met some cool people this morning. Got to meet Aubrey and Maya and Tim and Gregory at the door. Molly, who was leading the children's time, is actually a former student. Actually took a couple courses with me in the graduate program at Point Loma. It was amazing to just see Molly at work. Living into God's calling. I heard a person this morning when I went on a walk. She was singing "Wide Open Spaces" by Dixie Chicks to her kids.
Amazing.
Who were sitting in the back on like one of those little motorbike, but not motorbikes kind of things. It was so amazing. I just thought, wow, what an amazing singer. You know who you are, whoever you are. I'm sorry, you probably should sign up to be on the worship team or something. Maybe she already is, I don't know, but I didn't see her on it. But yeah, so many familiar faces, and I've been here a few times before, not necessarily in a Sunday morning gathering, so it's good to be here. I also want to just thank, I know Brent's not here, but thanks to Pastor Brent and to Molly, Pastor Molly, for the invitation. It really is an honor to be here this morning. I do know some of you, but I don't know all of you. I sometimes have this icebreaker thing. I have this little book of questions that I use sometimes. It's a question book that from like really shallow questions to really deep questions. And one of the questions that I sometimes pick because I find it so strange, and people find it to be a strange question until they really get into it. And they're like, oh, that was interesting to learn. And the question is, are you a person that does short goodbyes or long goodbyes? Like when it's time to leave an event or whatever, are you like the long goodbye person or the short goodbye person? So actually, I don't know all of you. So to get to know you, I want to have us just turn to someone next to you and try to answer that question. And then I'm going to get some people to share out for a little bit. So go for it.
It's a throwback.
It's a throwback?
The question moment is a throwback.
Yeah. All right, take about 10 more seconds. Cool. All right, now, I just want to hear a few people. I heard some things I thought was really funny, but just a few people. We'll do it this way. Throw your hands in the air if you're a short goodbye person. Oh. Oh. Throw your hands in the air if you're a long goodbye person. Okay, all right. Let's just hear maybe from like one, maybe two short goodbye people, or maybe you heard them talk about this. You can just out them and just say it this way. Like they're a short goodbye person. Here's why. Why short goodbyes? Why short goodbyes?
It's time to go.
Like we don't need to prolong this thing. I'm done. Yeah, like I'm out. Yeah, you just kind of like duck out. Don't even say goodbye sometimes. Sometimes, okay. Anyone else? Just a short good, yeah, go for it. You'll see them again. Like, yeah, whatever. And it's like a trusting thing. Like, I'm not gonna make this a big deal. I'll see you again. Oh, okay. Hey, long goodbye people. Let's hear it. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So you have to say goodbye to everyone. And you're saying it could be a cultural thing, you're not sure, but there's a sort of like responsibility. Like I've got to, it would be wrong of me not to. So it extends. It keeps all the way out the door. You're still saying goodbye to everybody. Okay. Someone else, long goodbye, yeah. It's rude not to, that kind of connects. It's kind of, okay, so it's, yeah, so it's one of your parents' faults, at least. It's a parent's fault. Okay, you're part of the problem. No, no one said it was a problem, except for, what's your name? Yeah, you did. You did. I'm kidding. Okay, so you're like, it's indoctrinated in you. It's like, you have to do it. Okay, someone else, long goodbye person. Oh, you're that person. You're that person. So you'll stand up, it's time to go, and as people are walking out the door, you'll ask a question that's like a whole new conversation. Okay, start it all over again. All right. Interesting. I have to say, I have some connection to this cultural sort of training that it's like a responsibility to do it. You know, my family in the blend of cultural norms, there's something there too. Even to the point where it actually seems rude that it keeps going, but they'll still keep going. You know, when it comes to goodbye, something I noticed, you know, as a professor at Point Loma, Nazarene University, I noticed something different about this school than the school I went to when I was a college student. Now, not to make any students here mad, but when I was a college student, their seniors didn't have to take finals in May. Yeah, it was senior week. And it was like, is that true for you? Yeah, true for you too. Yeah, yeah. So it was senior week, which meant like everyone else is taking finals, but seniors get to spend an entire week of saying goodbye. You get to hang out, you have fun, there's like events sometimes planned, sometimes not, you're taking trips to a place in the city that you had never been. You're just kind of acknowledging that we've been together for 4 years, some people five, some people six, and it's time for us to go, and we just want to stretch this and enjoy each other's presence a little bit more. But that doesn't happen here. I noticed this. And the other thing I noticed with it is sometimes it leaves people a little rocked. Like, huh, everyone, especially students, Mike, I see at least two, who are like around still after, you know, it's like, huh, what just happened? It's like a blur, and like people are gone. Because there really wasn't that goodbye time. The passage that we read, you didn't actually, oh, there it is now. Oh, there we go. How about that? The passage that was read earlier from John 14 this morning is actually the beginning of a long goodbye. Chapter 13 has Jesus telling disciples that he will eventually leave, but chapter 14 is the beginning of what is often called the farewell discourses, which is just a fancy way of saying goodbye conversations. It's getting up, starting the new conversation, getting to the door, seeing someone you feel responsible to talk to, getting to the car, getting in the car, waving, someone coming to the door. It's that. It is the beginning of the goodbye conversations. These farewell discourses or goodbye conversations are really three conversations in chapter 14 through 16, and then a goodbye prayer in chapter 17. That's a pretty long goodbye. Longer. What was your name in the green striped shirt?
Larry.
It's longer than Larry's goodbyes. You said impossible. Okay. When we look at the passage, we find, though, that there are some important reasons for this long goodbye. And we heard some important reasons for long goodbyes here. Okay? But we find that throughout that passage, there are some important reasons for the long goodbyes. Now, you know, I'm not saying these are the absolute, like, reasons. I'm not saying that if you read scripture, this is the only reasons you can see for these goodbyes. But as I read it, as I have spent time with it, I see at least three, like, really intriguing reasons Jesus gives this long goodbye and why John writes it this way. The first reason is that Jesus really wants them, these disciples, to stick together. Jesus is going away. And Jesus knows that he is that mutual friend in the crew that holds things together. Have you ever been a part of or maybe noticed a group of friends where like one person seems to be the glue? And if that person were to move away, it's pretty doubtful that the group will hang out anymore. Anyone know about that? Maybe you've experienced that and you're like, please don't bring that up. Sorry. You know, maybe the group will get back together when that person comes to town, but even then it's a little awkward because they're like, yeah, we never actually hung out while you were gone. So that was kind of weird. But, you know, Jesus is aware that he is that person. And he's wanting the disciples to stick together, not simply out of fear of what might happen, but he wants them to stick together in love. He wants them to commit to keep hanging out and to be there for each other, to love each other. There's an emphasis on this throughout all three goodbye conversations and in the goodbye prayer. And in this part of the conversation, Jesus, he actually comes off a bit demanding. He says things like, whoever does not love me does not keep my words. And earlier in the conversation, in verse 15, he says things like, if you love me, you will keep my commandments. Now, he's not talking about the Ten Commandments, and he's not talking about some list of rules he's leaving with them. I mean, he might have in mind the different examples of the kind of life he's shown them, maybe the life hacks he modeled for them over the years. He might have in mind the kind of life he mentored them into, showed them how to embrace. But all of it comes down to one thing. In the next goodbye conversation, in chapter 15, Jesus makes it clear. He says it this way. This is my commandment, that you love one another as I have loved you. Jesus' long goodbye is partly about wanting to make sure things don't fall apart. He's wanting them to keep on with the life they started together. All right, that's one reason. Another reason for Jesus' long goodbye is that he knows life will not be easy for them. They'll be persecuted. They might even begin to wonder if it's too dangerous to be seen together. But also, life, even without persecution, can be hard. Life can be hard. Things happen that are not fair. We sometimes have to make decisions between very unsatisfying choices. Situations are complex enough to draw us away from each other and put us in our own corners. And the systems that shape daily interactions and transactions are full of money grabs and land grabs and perpetual us versus them. Societies and nations sometimes seem to regress to its worst impulses and sometimes even declare it Christian and God-ordained. Jesus knows that life can be hard. And his long goodbye is about preparing them to make it through those tosses and twists and turns. I imagine I'll feel a tiny glimpse of this when I drop my daughter off for camp this summer. I'm sure we'll go over the packing list to make sure she has everything she needs. We'll make sure she has all the phone numbers in case of emergencies, and we'll remind her of the camp counselors that we know and trust. And we'll talk through a lot of social scenarios and what she might want to do. I imagine it'll be a long goodbye. But she'll only be gone a week. Jesus has in mind all of life. And here is what he tells them. The advocate, the Holy Spirit, whom the Father will send in my name, will teach you everything and remind you of all I have said to you. Peace I leave with you. My peace I give to you. I do not give as the world gives. Do not let your hearts be troubled. Do not let them be afraid. Do not be defined by this fear that you feel. Feel it, but don't be defined by it. Don't be afraid. The term advocate here, that this advocate that the Father will send in my name, it's an interesting term. It actually really means the one who is called to come alongside. Earlier in the conversation in verse 16, Jesus acknowledges that he has been their advocate, and now they'll need another one. The term is trying to get at the kind of presence Jesus has been for the disciples amidst hard life realities and hard life discernment. It has actually been translated to many things in English. Comforter, helper, encourager, listener, advisor, advocate, as the NRSVUE does. One who makes an appeal. My guess is that if contemporary Southern California culture could play a role in the translation, we might include like life coach with a capital L and a capital C. Translators haven't settled on what John means with the term, especially since it seems to take on multiple meanings throughout the Gospel of John. And, you know, actually John loves double entendre. If you were to get into the original language, which we're not going to do today, you'll find that he does intentionally use, he uses double entendre throughout the narrative so that people are sensing multiple meanings of one word throughout. He loves it. Like poetry, much of his writing is meant to conjure wonder, conversation, connection, rather than simply make an argument or lay out a history. So really, we can hold all those various meanings of the term together in a sort of tension. And that is partly what makes Jesus's goodbye so long. His presence for them has been layered. Whatever it has meant for him to come alongside each of the disciples amidst their collective and individual and particular lives is more than just one role. And what Jesus says here is that while he will go to the Father, we can still experience that multi-layered presence, this presence of God, and our invitation to connection with God is the mystery of our faith. Here's how he says it just moments earlier in the conversation, after acknowledging what his presence has meant for them. He says, "And I will ask the Father, and he will give you another advocate to be with you forever. This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive, because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know the Spirit because the Spirit abides with you, and the Spirit will be in you. I will not leave you orphaned. I'm coming to you. In a little while, the world will no longer see me, but you will see me. Because I live, you will also live. And on that day, you will know that I am in my Father, and you in me, and I in you." Jesus' long goodbye is partly about wanting to explain that the presence his disciples have known in him is still available. In a different way, but still a very real way. Whether life's twists and tosses and turns call for a comforter, a helper, an encourager, a listener, an advisor, an advocate to come alongside them, God remains present in these ways. God remains present to us in these ways. Now, the third reason that I'm noticing for Jesus' long goodbye is probably my favorite. And it is simply this. Jesus made his home among his disciples. Whenever John mentions dwelling or abiding, he is talking about making home. Building on the idea of abode, abiding is like homifying, making home. At the beginning of the Gospel of John, we learn that Jesus is God who became flesh and lived among us. But by the time we get to these farewell discourses, Jesus is talking all about abiding or making home. Not just living among, but making home. Chapter 14, verse 17 says it this way, "This is the Spirit of truth, whom the world cannot receive because it neither sees him nor knows him. You know him because he abides with you and he will be in you." Verse 23 says it this way, "Jesus answered him, those who love me will keep my word and my Father will love them and he will come to them and make our home with them." Chapter 15, verse 9, as this goodbye conversation continues, he says, "As the Father has loved me, so I have loved you. Abide in my love. Make your home in my love." And verse 4 in chapter 15 says it this way, "Abide in me as I abide in you. Make your home in me as I make my home in you." Jesus feels at home with them. This thing, this life they have together, he loves it. He feels at home with them. He's going to miss them. And we know from an earlier passage in John, when Lazarus dies, that Jesus really feels it when he misses his friends. And we know from the second goodbye conversation that Jesus doesn't view his disciples simply as servants, but as friends. He's going to miss them. Now, I don't know how many of you attend here regularly, but I listened to some of your sermons, and a few weeks ago, you reflected on Jesus grilling fish with the disciples and making breakfast together. You reflected on how comforting that was for the disciples and how meaningful it was to have that image of God as this God who makes breakfast on a beach when people are lost, looking for a sense of home. Here's what I'm saying. Whatever it was that felt comforting, the smell, the sizzle, the glowing flame, the conversation, the laughter, the togetherness, the taste, the breeze, the salt water in the air, the sand on the beach, whatever it was that felt like home for those disciples, it was that way for Jesus too. Jesus tells the disciples that he's going away and returning, and some traditions think of this simply as Jesus devising an escape plan for the disciples, but the point throughout the Gospel of John is that Jesus is on this back and forth pilgrimage to the Father and to this world because Jesus feels at home here too. And if it is that way for Jesus, it is that way for God. In Jesus, God makes home among us. God feels at home here. God so loves the world that God would make home here. This place and life with humanity and all of creation is home for God. The Creator has made home with creation forever. This movement between Jesus, this movement of Jesus between homes, continuously inviting us into this loving friendship as Jesus moves between these homes. This is the very life of God. Through Jesus, the Creator of the universe, or the multiverse, depending on what you read and watch. Through Jesus, God the Creator sees the realities of our lives, our neighborhoods, our world, through the angle of humanity. God is not standing above an operating table with a trained distance from our fears. Rather, God is so committed to seeing and feeling life from the angle of humanity that within the very life of God is an advocate who continuously and forever makes the appeal on our behalf for God to turn and look, to see and feel from our perspective, and to provide the discernment to know how to live the way of Jesus amidst our very complex situations, and to provide the courage to encourage us to follow through. God is with us because we are now and forever a home for God. As Jesus prepares to embark on this pilgrimage to the parent above all parents, to the Creator of all things, Jesus extends his goodbye. At least in this moment, Jesus is into long goodbyes. At least in this moment. I mean, throughout chapters, we see him come and go a lot. But at least in this moment, he's into long goodbyes. And it is with reason. He wants his disciples to keep hanging out, to keep being there for each other, to keep loving each other. He recognizes that life can be hard, and he wants to share with them that as they love each other, they will sense God's very presence. And he wants them to know that peace, the peace that comes in embracing love each day, is available. Lastly, Jesus gives this long goodbye because this place, this community, this world, for all that it is, has become a home for him. This is the good news. God has made home with us here, now, and forever. Grace and peace be with you.